Hello and welcome back to the Bug in a Rug podcast. My name is Caitlin.
And I'm Whitney.
Thank you for joining us again on this new episode.
In a new month.
Happy November, everybody. Everybody's already getting their Christmas trees out.
I object.
We gotta get our turkeys out first.
I think we should get our turkeys out. Decorate the turkeys, put them up in the living room.
Let them run around a little bit.
The cats would have a good time chasing turkeys.
Turkeys are big, are you kidding me? The cats would be scared.
Ellie might be scared. You don't think Cooper would try and fight them?
No.
How big are turkeys? So.
Bigger than you're picturing, I think.
Bigger than a chicken?
Yeah.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Is it bigger than a bread box? Anyway, I hope everybody had a fun and safe Halloween. Halloween month, the whole October, and we hope that everybody is, you know, still in the festive mood as we move on into November.
We spent our Halloween in the dark.
We did, because our power was out.
Yeah, our power was out. We actually uploaded our last episode from the Perkins parking lot.
Yeah, free Wi-Fi, baby.
Free Wi-Fi, baby.
They know me personally now. I ask for the chair by the outlet.
There's only, like, one outlet in the entire place that you can use.
Exactly. Exactly. I know exactly where it is.
But we did it from the car this time because it was raining and our Wi-Fi reached the car. But we still got it up. We got up a Halloween episode and we're very excited about that. So if you haven't checked it out, go ahead and listen to our very short episode. But it gives you a little bit of history on Halloween.
Yes, it's very educational.
And an episode before that, I told you guys about the story of Bloody Mary, the game. And we actually asked you guys to tell us your stories about your Bloody Mary experiences. And I think we got one, didn't we?
We sure did. So our Aunt Pam actually sent us an spooky story about her playing Bloody Mary, and I'm gonna read it for you now. Yes, we did do this. We played Bloody Mary. We had a sleepover at our home in California, upstairs in Sharon's bedroom, her sister. Four of us had a candle and a big dresser mirror. We chanted, Bloody Mary, full of grace, Bloody Mary, show your face. We kept saying the chant until the candle gets at least 2 to 3 inches high with bright flame. You look in the mirror, and then you see her face. It took a while, but finally we looked in the mirror and something hit the window. It looked like a face. We screamed, running out of the bedroom, falling down the stairs, trying to tell Grandma that Bloody Mary is upstairs. Papaw comes in from the kitchen saying that's what we get for messing with evil spirits. The next day we found a stuffed brown paper bag with a rope on it in the backyard by the bathroom window. Papaw, their dad, laughed. He had climbed onto the roof, lowered the bag, hitting the window, and scaring the shit out of everyone. P.S. We were also playing with a Ouija board. Never again. Also, the girls never came over again.
Oh my gosh. Now, this is a very Papaw thing to do. So, Papaw, being Aunt Pam's dad, is our grandfather. I'll draw you a family tree. Maybe we'll post that to the,
to
the website. But he's played similar tricks on us before.
Me, specifically.
Well, on you specifically. But if you're ever, you know, looking for ghosts in their house or anywhere around him, he tends to make sure that something spooky happens.
He makes sure that you find one.
I just think it's funny that he was like, oh, that's what you get for calling evil spirits, when he knew.
He's teaching him a lesson. Knew. You shouldn't mess with evil spirits.
You know what? It's better to mess with evil spirits in a safe, supervised environment rather than to go out on your own and be Oh, wait. Is that alcohol? Maybe that's alcohol.
Wait, what? Yeah, I think you've gotten ghosts mixed up with alcohol. But anyway. So, we also got another comment and review on iTunes, and read it now. Okay. So this comment is from Redd1223. The comment reads, such a good podcast. Winnie and Caitlin do such a good job doing a captivating and informative, spooky podcast. Can't wait to hear more.
Whoever you are, thank you.
Yeah, let us know, because I don't know who this one is. I know I guessed the last one, and I was right. It was Carly, but
if you want to stay anonymous, that's fine.
That's fine, but
Tis the mysterious seat. Tis the season of mystery.
That's true. But if you're like, duh, it's me, your dad.
I don't think it's
let us know.
I don't think it's dad.
I don't think so either. I'm just saying.
Whoever you are, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
If you have more Bloody Mary stories, or if you want to leave an iTunes comment and review, those are things that we would love to read out on the podcast.
Sure.
Also, send us in your ideas, but we'll talk about that more at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. Right now, let's get to today's topic.
Ooh.
So today is going to be really spooky. Not really, but it is a ghost story.
Oh, okay. Have we had a ghost story yet?
This is our first ghost story.
Okay, I'm ready.
But this is one that I almost didn't think about doing because to me it's a really common ghost story. I realized that it's not, though. It was just because it is one that's told based on the area where I went to school for a couple years.
Okay.
So this story takes place in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, mm-hmm. specifically the Lewisburg area, and it is the story of the only ghost whose testimony was ever used to convict a murderer.
Really? Listen, if I'm going to become a ghost.
Is that a guarantee?
Yeah. And I'm going to come back and haunt some people. I can't guarantee that it will be for justice, but we can only hope, right?
You have to plan your unfinished business then. Yeah. If you're going to guarantee it, you have to make sure
there's unfinished business.
Maybe that's why I procrastinate all the time, because I just got to make sure there's always something I haven't completed.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to come back as a ghost for like, I didn't make my bed this morning.
I left dishes in the sink. Yeah,
I mean, maybe. I don't know, actually. I don't know how it works.
I don't know the definition.
True.
But anyway, this is a story that when I went to school in Lewisburg that was told around the town.
Is that true?
That it's told around the town in Lewisburg? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You went into bars and the bartender's like, have you heard the story?
Funny enough, yes. Because the ghost who we're talking about today, her name is Elva Zona Heister Shue, and she went by Zona, and there is a local...
Elva Zona Heister Shue.
Careful, she'll come tell on you.
Hey, good one.
But Zona, which is what she went by, she actually has her own craft beer named after her.
Oh.
The Greenbrier Valley Brewing Company in Lewisburg, they like to take local West Virginia legends and make craft beers that are named after them, and Zona's Revenge is a beer.
Awesome.
So yes, the bartenders would say, hey, have you tried Zona's Revenge?
Can you get it here, or is it like Greenbrier local? You know what I mean?
No, you can buy it in West Virginia, different Greenbrier Brewing Company.
Like where they sell
beers.
It. Yeah.
I'm not sure if they still sell Zona's Revenge or not. I know you can get Mothman and Sasquatch, and there's one that they sell, I think it's called Bat Boy.
Okay.
Around.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, there's one around the Halloween season that they sell specifically around October.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can go. It's actually a really cool brewery. They have long picnic tables and cornhole inside right next to, like, the big brewing tank, so you can see it all. Weather.
That's cool.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So Zona,
that's who we're talking about today. She was born in 1876 and lived with her mother, Mary Jane Heister.
Okay.
I like the name Heister. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I like it.
What's the full name of Zona?
Elva Zona Heister Shue. Careful, she'll come tell on you.
It's really good. It's the name's just cool.
I know. I agree. And I didn't know that she had such a long name. Shue is her married name, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
So she lived with her mother, Mary Jane Heister. Some accounts say her father was still around, but he's not really part of the story.
Okay.
So I'm not sure whether he was still living when our story takes place or not.
Okay.
So, Zona was born in 1876. She lived with her mother, Mary Jane Heister. She's said to be a very pretty girl. She may have had a child out of wedlock around 1895.
Okay, so she'd be like, what, 22?
19? I don't know.
Forgot when she was born, sorry.
1876.
Six, I was thinking three.
Okay. So I think 19.
19, you're right.
I've only seen one account of that. No, but back in these times, having a child out of wedlock was a big deal. That was just a big no-no. But she's still said to be very pretty. That's the one thing that most people said about her, that she's very kind, very pretty. Enter Mr. Shue. Now, I always thought that his name was Edward Shue, but I found accounts where it was Trout Shue or Erasmus Stribling shoe. So I don't really know. E-shoe.
Trout had to be a nickname.
I couldn't tell you.
He went fishing a lot, and so that everybody called him Trout, you know?
I don't know. I thought it was very strange that no one could agree on what his name was, yeah, other than the last name was Shu.
Okay.
He was said to be a big, powerful man, very charming, very handsome, with black hair and blue eyes. He moved from Droop Mountain in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, to work for James Cruikshank at the local blacksmith shop.
Okay.
So, Zona and Mr. Shu met in a whirlwind romance. They were married within only a few months.
Ooh.
Right. But, I mean, if she had a child out of wedlock, which was... There's no mention of the child. I don't know if the child was sent away and being cared for by someone else. Because, I mean, it's a bad look to have a kid and not be married in the 1800s.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure. But, anyway, he wanted to marry her right away. Zona's mother, Mary Jane, did not approve of this match at all. No one really says why.
Well,
I mean, too quick.
Yeah, or if she was just like, I get bad vibes.
Right, and he was someone from outside of a very small town.
Yeah.
Probably seemed too good to be true, so charming and coming out of nowhere.
Right.
And she's probably like, I don't know anything about this guy.
Yeah.
But they were married on October 20th, 1896, at the Old Methodist Church in Livesay's Mill. They moved together into a small two-story house after they were married on the other side of Sewell Mountain, S-E-W-E-L-L. And this was on the other side of the mountain from her mom. And her mom actually never went to see their house. She had never been there because she didn't approve. She just was like, I'm not coming to visit you.
I, like, get people who, families are like that, but I also think that if I didn't approve, I would be there, like, every day.
To check up on
just to check and, like, stare at the guy and, like, a discontent, like, the whole time.
Disapproving glares,
like, just angry, making it awkward all the time.
And I don't know if it was too far for her mother to travel, or she was just like, I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't really tell. All I know is that she had never seen where they lived.
Okay.
Now, within a few months after them being married, Zona fell very ill. She was treated by Dr. Knapp, which is the family doctor in the area, K-N-A-P-P.
Oh, I was like, that's my nickname, Dr. Knapp.
Some accounts say that his first name or initials were J-M. Others say it was George Knapp. I'm not entirely sure, so we're going to call him Dr. Knapp.
Dr. Knapp, okay.
Or Dr. Knapp.
No. Knapp. Yeah, either way.
Either way.
I don't think it's pronounced like that.
Knapp-a-pa.
No.
My story, I'll tell it however I want.
Sure, that's true.
Anyway, he said that he was treating her for, quote, female troubles.
Okay.
Although other accounts say that she was being treated for the flu or some kind of respiratory illness.
Okay.
But she was feeling much better within a couple weeks, according to Dr. Knapp-a-pa.
Knapp-a-pa.
Now, on January 22nd, 1897, so this wasn't long after they were married. Remember, they were married on October 20th, 1896. So this was only a few months later.
Yeah.
January 22nd. Mr. Shu went to the home of Martha Jones, who is an African-American lady who went by Aunt Martha.
Okay.
And he requested that her 11-year-old son, Anderson, or Andy, would do chores at his house, including going to pick up the eggs for Zona, because she still wasn't feeling 100% at this time.
Okay.
She was on the mend, but he's like, hey, she's still not feeling great. Can you go pick up the eggs for her? Do whatever she needs.
Okay.
I'm going to be in town doing some chores.
Okay, I wonder if this is, like, a regular thing, because that's kind of a strange request to walk to your neighbor's house and be like, can your son go take care of my wife for a little bit? Thanks.
Well, Andy was known to do small jobs for people around town.
Okay.
So, in fact, that day, he couldn't go right away to Zona's house. He had to stop and do some jobs for Dr. Knapp-a-pa first.
Okay, so it was kind of like a little... Okay, so he just took up small things. Like, everybody knew him, and they're like, yeah, we can trust him with this. He can go do it, whatever.
Right, you need something done, you just send Andy.
Yeah, okay.
So, anyway, it was kind of strange, because while Andy was doing these little odd jobs, Shu kept coming back and checking and being like, hey, have you gone to check at my house yet? Have you gone to help Zona? And he kept coming back several times and seemed more and more impatient, according to Aunt Martha. It was late in the afternoon before Andy actually went to the house, and when he showed up, he found a pretty gruesome sight.
Mm-mm.
The door was left open, and there was a trail of blood leading to the bottom of the stairs where Zona was laying with her arms kind of folded in an odd way. So at first he thought maybe she fell down the stairs, but then the way her arms were folded, it looked really strange, plus the, like, trail of blood.
Yeah.
But Andy, being a young boy, you know, he ran immediately from the house to his mom, Aunt Martha, who fetched the doctor and Mr. Shue. By the time Dr. Knapapa, or Dr. Knapp, I'll stop saying
his name. Yeah, I was like, stop.
By the time Dr. Knapp reached the house, Mr. Shue had already taken Zona's body upstairs, changed her clothing, and placed her in bed.
I don't know about you, but this sounds a little suspicious.
Just a tad. Now, the doctor says that Shue was just laying over the body sobbing, and he didn't really want the doctor to check her over. He was saying, oh, she just died because she's sick. She was sick, and it finally just took her. He had dressed her in, some accounts say, in a high-collared dress, high-collared gown that he said was her favorite gown. And the doctor... Well, the doctor said that he came, he looked at her, and he took a short peek. He didn't. He knew Mr. Shue was already upset, and it was clear that she died from an everlasting faint, which translates to her heart failed. Although later in records, he would record that the cause of death he suspected was childbirth.
Wait, what?
Exactly.
Wait.
It doesn't make, like, any sense.
So he went over, right? And at this point, Mr. Shue had taken the, moved the body from the crime scene.
Crime's a strong word at this point, but yes.
The crime scene. Well, someone died. It's a crime scene.
He moved her up a flight of stairs.
Moved the body, changed all of her clothes. Okay, and then was like, oh no, she just died of illness. I know it. And then the doctor was like, yeah, her heart probably gave out. But then when he went back to his office, he wrote, wow, she died giving child in childbirth.
That's what the records
say. Were there signs of this? Like, what?
He just wrote that in his records, but they say it was very strange because Miss Martha, or Aunt Martha, and Shue and Andy all said, the doctor said she died from an everlasting faint. So I don't know where the miscommunication happened or if he told them that's what it was and didn't want to soil her name again by saying childbirth again. I don't know. I don't know. It was very strange. But how would she... I mean, it would be loss of a child, I would guess. Not necessarily childbirth if she's only been married a couple months. So I don't know if you thought there was a scandal.
Okay. Interesting.
It's very strange. It's very strange. But it gets stranger.
Oh, boy.
So, the doctor had noticed that there was some, maybe discoloration on her jawline or cheek.
Okay.
But he couldn't, he just took a short peek, like I said. He didn't really look over the body. And he didn't perform an autopsy because clearly that's how she died.
Okay.
So.
My eyes are rolling.
Roll your eyes. That's good for an audio medium.
I know. Picture it now, audience. Yeah, I'm rolling my eyes.
Now, in this time, it was usually customary for the women of the town and the family members of the deceased to prepare the body, but Mr. Shue would not let anybody touch Zona.
Okay.
He insisted that he do it himself. He dressed her again in a high, stiff-collared dress and would not let people super close to her. He said, you know, he was just grieving so much and he didn't think she would want it. He was just very protective of her body. Now, people who, I don't know if they were real or not. It seemed very convincing to most people.
Although, I mean, if you really did lose his wife, I'm sure he'd be hysterical, so.
Right, or he's a really good actor. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
But people at the funeral reported his behavior was very bizarre.
Okay.
He was sobbing 1 minute, and then the next minute he's very energetic. And saying, you know, don't touch her, like, back up. It was very weird. He was almost back and forth between two extremes of emotions, yeah. Which, I mean, again, I don't know what his grief process looked like.
Everybody's different.
Now, he had placed a pillow on one side of Zona's head and a sheet on the other and draped a scarf over her that he said was her favorite, although her mother said she never remembered her wearing that scarf, which I thought was funny. People noted that they thought there was an odd looseness to her head when they were carrying the body to the burial site. And when,
boy howdy, that's not good.
No, it's not. Not even a little bit. Little wibble wobble. Yeah, it just sounds off.
Yeah.
Mary Jane Heaster, before they lowered the body and closed the casket, whatever they were burying her in, I'm not quite sure how it worked in the 1890s, but they made it seem like it was a casket of some sort.
Right.
When they removed the pillow and the sheet from the next to her head, Mary Jane tried to hand them back to Mr. Shue, and he's like, nah, you keep them. I don't want them. Which is very strange.
Yeah.
But Mary Jane Heaster, Zona's mother, took the sheet home, and she dumped it in some water to rinse it out.
Okay.
And the water turned red. And the sheet turned pink, and she said, this is an omen. This is a bad omen. Something bad has happened.
Okay.
But she didn't know if it was just a sign because her daughter had died.
Okay.
She thought it was very strange, but she does recall this incident later.
Yeah. Wait, I have a question really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because Andy thought she might have fallen down the stairs, and if the head was a little loose, why didn't the doctor think of that either?
Because she had already been sick. And so he wasn't a very good doctor. He didn't take a good look at her. And I think what probably happened is that Andy rushed home to his mom and said, Miss Shue is dead.
Right.
His
Everybody
mom
panicked.
Told the doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor ran home. And by the time he saw the body, it was in bed and just dead.
Yeah.
Cleaned up. So there's nothing for him to say.
Yeah.
Oh, she fell down the stairs when the body wasn't at the bottom.
I was just
thinking
of the loose head, because if she would have fallen down the stairs,
it would make sense, right?
Hit her neck or head or back or something.
No, I agree with you completely. Yeah. It would have made more sense to say that there was an accident and she tripped.
Right, right.
Then that she passed away from an illness that was resolving.
Yeah, okay.
Or that
anyway,
they thought that they were.
Anyway, bad omen. Her mom dunked. So the sheet was white?
The sheet appeared white, but it was rolled tightly.
Okay, so then when she unrolled it and put it in the water,
The water turned red and the sheet turned pink.
Okay.
Like she couldn't get the color out of it.
Yeah.
A couple weeks go by, almost a month, and Mary Jane Heaster is awakened in the night by an apparition. She said it was the spitting image of her daughter, and the daughter was Zona, of course. And Zona was saying, you know, hey, Mom, my husband killed me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which her mom was like, okay, I must be dreaming. And she actually reached out to touch her, and she said she could feel her there, which I thought was interesting. She said, I don't understand, you know, why would you say this? Why would he kill you? And she said that Mr. Shue came home and he was angry that Zona had not made meat for supper or enough meat with supper, even though she said, you know, I had potatoes, I had this, I had apples cut, I had all these things laid out for him. But their marriage was already strained and this was like the last straw for him. He said, you didn't have meat for supper. So he got angry and strangled her and broke her neck.
Hmm.
To prove this to her mother, Zona's apparition turned her head all the way around until it was facing backwards. And she said, see, look what I can do.
That sounds terrifying.
Absolutely. She returned to her mother 3 or 4 times, and she talked with her about different things. They made chit-chat. She kept repeating, you know, he killed me. Are you going to do anything about it?
Right.
And she even said what clothes she had been killed in, which her mother did not know.
Because he had changed her clothes.
Right. Now, she also said other things to her mother that come up later in the court documents, which there are court documents to support this case. But there's other things that come up in the court documents, such as Zona told her mother, he would get mad at me and he would take my pretty things down from the shelves and he would hide them from me. And I know he would take them to this place. If you go there, you will find a bag of my things.
Okay.
Now, her mother...
Just, like, pawn them off?
No, he would go and hide them from her.
Like, in their house?
No, it was down behind their house somewhere.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't very clear
where
it was, and her mother actually never found these things.
Yeah. But
the stuff was missing, yes. Yeah. And Zona was adamant that he was taking her things to punish her. Mary Jane started telling the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
She started saying, listen, I've seen my daughter as a ghost. She's told me that he killed her. You know, we have to do something. And people were getting upset.
Mm-hmm.
Some people started to believe her.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the prosecuting attorney, John Alfred Preston, said, this is enough. You're causing people to be in a frenzy. If it'll make you satisfied, we'll dig up the body.
Yes. Yes, we will. It will satisfy me, because the doctor didn't do a good job the first time. We need to relook at this. Just saying.
Need to relook.
We need to relook.
So he finally agrees to help her in order to kind of settle her down.
Right.
Now it took
some riots in the streets.
Now it took some time in the stories that I've heard to get them to exhume the body.
Yeah.
But they were able to get the body.
I'm sure it wasn't favored by a lot of people to dig up the body.
No.
So
wasn't
that makes sense,
pleasing
but
to anyone.
Yeah.
Now, I found this interesting that they exhumed the body on February 22nd of 1897.
Okay.
Now, remember, she was killed on January 22nd. So, this is a month later.
Oh, just a month.
Yes, yes, because her mother was getting apparitions before the month was over, and she was able to get
people
moving.
That's right. Okay, yeah.
And so, on the February 22nd, they exhumed the body. The autopsy was performed in the one-room schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You gotta do what you gotta do. You gotta share space.
Absolutely. I mean, it was probably close by to the cemetery. They didn't have to move the body very far. Now, if I'm understanding the layout correctly or the logistics of this, the church and the cemetery were a little further away from town.
Okay.
So this was probably the schoolhouse was in that area, and it was just easier to do there.
A little down the road, yeah.
So, Mr. Shu was told that he had to be present at the autopsy because it was his wife's body. And
Wowza.
He was not happy about this and was like, you're going to arrest me after this. Which they were like, that's kind of strange.
They're like, why would we do that?
But I have a quote here from one of the resources that I have that says, quote, "The examination was conducted by Dr. Knapp, Dr. Rupert, and Dr. McClung. The examination disclosed that the neck was dislocated between the first and second cerebral vertebra, the ligaments were torn and ruptured, the windpipe had been crushed to the point at the front of the neck, all other portions and organs of the body were apparently in perfectly healthy state. There was also a bruising pattern in the shape of fingers from being choked." Now, isn't it strange that the body hadn't decomposed in a month's time to where you could still see bruising on the neck?
Yeah.
This was another one of the events that people found very mysterious about the whole case, was that Zona came back. Not only did she come back to tell her mother what had happened, but that the body was preserved enough for them to do a proper autopsy.
You're mad enough.
You're so enraged that you preserve your own body in the afterlife.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So, we had three doctors this time.
Yes.
Taking a look at it. Dr. Knapp was present this time, but he did admit he didn't do a very good autopsy.
You know what? At least he admitted it.
He wanted to be present here.
Yeah.
Wanted to make sure it was done correctly and be a part of it.
Right.
Now, Mr. Shu was arrested at this point, and more of his past came to life. Mm-hmm. He had had two wives before Zona.
Did they die in mysterious circumstances?
Well, there was the first one he was divorced from, and she stated that it was because of great cruelty on his part.
Okay.
And the second one had a quote, suspicious death.
Uh-huh.
While in prison awaiting trial, it was said that Mr. Shu told one of his cellmates that he wished to have seven wives, and they don't have enough evidence to find me guilty of this anyway, so I'll keep working my way along.
Okay, Mr. Shu. Sure. Keep telling yourself
Well,
that.
He's saying that, yeah, she's dead, but you don't have enough evidence to say I did this.
I don't know. I feel like there is. I mean, who else was there?
Well, like you said, she could have fallen down the stairs.
Yeah, but there's fingerprint bruising patterns. He was acting suspicious towards Aunt Martha and Andy because he kept bothering them about it that day. Then, when they went to go look at the body, he had changed the clothes, wouldn't let anybody near it, and had a high collar on. And the ghost. I believe her, too.
I'm just saying this is what he didn't think.
Are you telling me he didn't get what happened to the court case? Because I'm going to be mad.
Well, I'm about to tell you about the trial. So the trial began on June 22nd, 1897. Mary Jane Heaster's testimony of the ghost was recorded in court documents, which I will put on our website. Now, the prosecution did not want to bring Miss Mary Jane Heaster to the stand because they thought if she talks about this ghost, mm-hmm. it might discredit her in the eyes of some people.
Yeah,
they might think she's crazy and it might hurt our case. But the defense attorney wanted to hear it because they thought, okay, if she looks crazy, we can get him off.
Yeah, unless you have a bunch of people in the jury that believe in
who already
ghosts.
Believe her.
Right. You know what I mean?
And now, it is important to note that Zona's mother did not believe in ghosts prior to actually seeing her daughter. And she was always adamant about that. But I'd like to read you the quote from the court documents from Miss Mary Jane Heister in response to basically the defense attorney is saying, did you really see your daughter or could you have been having a bad dream?
Okay.
So Mary Jane Heister said, quote, they saw enough themselves without me telling them. It was no dream. She came back and told me that he was mad she didn't have no meat cooked for supper, but she said she had plenty and said that she had butter and apple butter, apples and named over two or three kinds of jellies, pears and cherries and raspberry jelly. And she says I had plenty. And she says, don't you think that he was mad and just took down all my nice things and packed them away and just ruined them? And she told me where I could look down back of Aunt Martha Jones in the middle of the rocky place, and I could look in the cellar behind some loose plank and see. It was a square log house, and it was hewed up in the square. And she said for me to look right there on the right-hand side door. And she came four times and four nights, but the second night she told me that her neck was squeezed off at the first joint, and it was just as she told me.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to read more about the actual court documents, you can definitely go on, and I'll have them all there.
Yeah.
But I just want to give you the little snippet of her saying what she told.
Her testimony of what happened.
Right. She's saying, listen, I haven't changed my story once.
Yeah.
Y'all know I didn't believe in ghosts before. Now I'm seeing my daughter. She's real as could be. I could touch her. And she told me things that came true. She was able to say that what clothes she had been wearing when she was killed, even though she never saw the body. And she was able to describe their house, even though she had never been to their house.
Yeah. So how else would the mom know, I guess, right?
Right, exactly. And she...
I didn't think about that.
Right. It was very interesting because that's why I told you before, her mother's never been to their home.
Yes.
So, evidence from the doctors who performed the autopsy matched with the testimony given by Miss Mary Jane Heister, Zona's mother.
Mm-hmm.
The jury found Mr. Hsu guilty on July 11th, 1897. As he was preceded out of the courtroom, there was a lynch mob waiting outside.
Oh, no.
Now, the deputy sheriff did disband the lynch mob.
Oh, no.
And several arrests and charges were...
handed out.
brought against the people who were trying to have them hung in the streets. But instead, Mr. Hsu was sent to Moundsville Prison and died there on March 13th, 1900 while
Moundsville
in jail.
Prison? Like close to here, Moundsville Prison?
Yes.
Ooh, okay, okay.
Now.
I mean, it's a small town, though, so I could see that probably everybody knew her, right? Like, at the time.
Everyone knew her. They said she was very beautiful.
Yeah.
They knew of their whirlwind romance. You know, everybody knew, you know... Miss Martha Jones,
yeah,
she can be trusted, Annie can be trusted. This is a very small, close-knit community.
Yeah.
And this was something that never happened there before. Now, before I told you that this is the only time in history where a ghost's testimony has been used in a court trial,
yes,
there is actually a sign, one of those historical markers, the big white ones, in Lewisburg, where I went to school, and it says, the Greenbrier Ghost, which is what Zona came to be known as, Greenbrier Ghost. Interred in nearby cemetery is Zona Heister Hsu. Her death in 1897 was presumed natural until her spirit appeared to her mother to describe how she was killed by her husband, Edward. Autopsy on the exhumed body verified the apparition's account. Edward, found guilty of murder, was sentenced to the state prison, only known case in which testimony from a ghost helped convict a murderer.
That's awesome.
And the more interesting part to me is he was possibly a serial killer. He had committed
he killed his
possibly
other wife.
Another murder. Mm-hmm. And who knows before that if he said he wanted to have seven wives.
Yeah.
And on her gravestone, which I'm not sure how much later this headstone was erected, but it says, in memory of Zona Heister Hsu, the Greenbrier Ghost, 1876 to 1897.
That's awesome.
And it can be seen in the cemetery, and I'll post a picture of it. In the house in which Mr. and Mrs. Hsu lived.
Yeah.
And some pictures of Zona and her mama.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've always found this story interesting, mostly because the first time I heard it was on a ghost tour in Lewisburg.
Mm.
As we were walking through, they were able to say, you know, right in town, you don't see these places where the story talks about, but, you know, the story is very popular in the community.
Right.
Which is why I almost didn't think about it. Because I thought, you know, most people know the story, but that's just not true. It's just a community tale.
That's awesome, though. I mean, I can't. Oh, snaps to her, right? Like, snaps to her to take charge and come back and, you know, not take that from him.
She didn't let him get away with it.
No, definitely not. And that is great.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You know what her mama probably said?
What?
Told you so.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I don't think she said that. But I think that her mom knew he was no good from the beginning.
That's, yeah.
And
got
although
bad
it's,
vibes.
Right. And although I think it was very sad to for the having the loss of Zona, I think it was very important for her to see him brought to justice in the end.
Yeah. And she had that slight connection with her daughter one last time. Well, I'm assuming she didn't really see her after that, so.
No, she has never seen an apparition of Zona again.
Yeah.
And she's still says she doesn't necessarily believe in ghosts, but this was absolutely real.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know why Zona came back to her, but she did.
She came back so she could have justice.
Right, and I think her mother was said to be the only person that was close to her.
Yeah.
And her mother even said that she's the only person who... I'm the only person who she trusted enough to bring this information to, so that's why she came to me.
Yeah, because who knows if anybody else would have believed her and would have, you know, made such a riot about it to get her exhumed and re-looked at in the end. So,
yeah.
It's awesome.
Didn't rest until she had everybody riled up in the prosecuting attorney on board for the ride.
I would not either. My husband decided to do something like that. Oof. Boy, I'd be haunting everybody.
Boy, howdy.
I'll be haunting everybody.
I left some dishes in the sink, and also my husband murdered me. How about we get on that?
How about we get on that, people? How about we get on that?
Yes.
So if you want to read more about Winnie's story or look at her sources where the court documents are, you can go to our website. It's buginarug.podbean.com. We always post our sources there, so if you're interested for these or for any other story, they're always linked right below the description of the story. So if you want to look at those, you definitely can.
We also have pictures that we'll post on there,
mm-hmm.
as well as on the Instagram page and
yes.
Facebook page.
Yes. So Instagram and our Twitter are at BIAR Podcast. We also have Facebook, where you can go look at our pictures as well. If you just search Bug in a Rug, it will come up. You'll see our logo, and you can click on there. You can like the page, join the page, follow the page, subscribe to the page. Yeah, we post some good stuff on there. If you want to leave us a comment, feel free to do that on iTunes, or you can reach out to DM us on any of those pages that we said, or, you know, shout us out. Give us an email at biarpodcast@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. Any suggestions you have for upcoming stories, any of your Bloody Mary experiences, mm-hmm. we'd still love to hear those. We've still never played before, although that may be changing very shortly.
Yes. Maybe.
Maybe not. So anyway, Caitlin, after listening to this story, do you think that Zona will keep you up at night, or will you still be able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug?
I think that the thing that'll keep me up at night is how there are terrible people out there that will kill their wives over not having enough meat. That's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
But I think that since she had justice served, that helps me sleep as snug as a bug in a rug.
Excellent.
You know, it gives me hope that even as a ghost, we can find justice and come back and fight for things that we know need to be fought for.
Ghost justice for all.
Ghost justice. Hashtag ghost justice for all.
Are we going to start a hashtag now?
No, definitely not. Maybe. I don't know. But go Zona. This is a good story. I like her. She's a badass ghost.
Elva Zona Heaster Shoe. Watch out. She'll come tell on you.
Yeah, Mr. Shoe.
I have no idea what his name was still. Like
Edward.
The actual sign says Edward. The court documents say Ezramus or something like that. Like, I just don't
His name's Ezramus. Edward for short. Trout as a nickname.
Edward is short for Azaramus?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I'll take it. I don't care.
What are you doing? Quit typing. What are you doing?
I was sending you my resources.
Right now? That can you can hear that on the microphone.
Hey, everybody. I just also want to say that if you hear some jingle jangles in the background at any time during our podcast, it's probably the cats.
It's always the cats.
It's always the cats.
All right. Anyway, time to wrap it up.
Okay, so listeners, I hope that our story doesn't keep you up at night and you're still able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug.
Signing off, my name's Caitlin.
I'm Whitney.
Bye.
Sleep tight.